Welcome, friend. Welcome to the temple of the dividend discount models. Here you will learn the mystery of discounted cash flows. All right. Enough of the mysticism. I apologize, you know. But to people who are not initiated, it might as well be Sanskrit chants from the 900 BC. Dividend discount models, slide number 17. Let's get started here. The dividend discount models start the chapter 6 material in the book. I put it second because they're a little bit more tricky. They're a little more trickier. They're trickier than the price models. So let's get started on slide 17. Dividend discount models are based on the idea that shares of stocks are valued on the basis of the present value of the future dividend streams the stock is projected to produce. So we're using dividends to value the stock. They go by various names: dividend valuation models, dividend discount models, discounted cash flow models. That's my favorite saying. And if you remember from our first presentation in Chapter 6, we said that the value of a stock is based on the present value of its future cash flows. Therefore, dividend discount models should be extremely popular, right? Because the dividends are future cash flows in our pocket. They sent us a check. Well, they don't send a check anymore. It's all electronic. But during the 1990s, investors who adhered to these types of models were considered old-fashioned and outdated fuddy-duddies, you know, stodgy. But guess what happened? Those investors weathered the 2000 to 2002 downturn very well. Dividends have become important again, and with very good reason. Here is the dividend discount model, the DDM, in its purest incarnation. Remember that the value of the stock is equal to the present value of all expected future dividend payments. So in math-ease, in mathematical terms, we say that the present value, the price of the stock at time zero, meaning now, is equal to the dividend that we're going to get in year number one, divided by 1 plus K. What is K? Well, K in baseball means strikeout. But no, K here stands for our required rate of return. And then we're going to add to that the dividend in year number 2 divided by 1 plus our required rate of return squared, plus the dividend in year number 3 divided by 1 plus our required rate of return to the third power, and so forth and so on as we go through time. Now, you're probably thinking, Piano, you told me I wasn't going to have to do any fancy math, and I'm not kidding. You're not going to have to do this, folks. We're going to see how we do these without all the tricky math. And if you don't understand the formula, don't worry, because we're not even going to use it. We're going to use the present value tables. But this is the purest incarnation. And this is from the 6th edition on page 183, but it's also in the 5th and the 4th if you have those, but the pages are different, but they're very similar, very close to that. And they give an example, which is kind of ridiculous, of a company that pays 3 annual dividends of $100 per share and then promptly goes out of business. A required rate of return of 15%, which I think is way too high. I mean, who's requiring 15%? Good luck to them. But if you run the numbers with a scientific calculator, which you don't have to do, you get $100 divided by 1.15, and whatever that is, and $100 divided by 1.15 squared, plus $100 divided by 1.15 to the third power. And if you have a scientific calculator and want to do this, you'll find that we would value this stock at $228.32. But as I asked, how many companies pay three annual dividends and then go out of business? Plus, we keep using this term present value. Has it bugged you that we haven't described what present value means? What does present value mean? Slide number 19. Present value is the value today of a lump sum or series of payments to be received at some future date in the future. In other words, we're going to get $100 in a year, and then $100 in 2 years, and $100 in 3 years. What is it worth to us at time zero today? And if you did those optional future value problems way back in chapter one, you will see that this is the inverse. It's the opposite calculation. Future value tells us what a value today is going to be worth in the future. Present value tells us what a value that we're going to get in the future someday is worth to us today. They're two sides of the same coin. And in finance, present value tells us what that future value that we expect to get in a year, in 2 years, in 10 years, whatever, is worth to us today. So if you did any of the future value calculations, this might look familiar. And if you didn't, don't worry about it. But if we put $10,000 away today, in 10 years, if we get 8%, the present value multiplier, 2.1589, tells us that $10,000 will be worth $21,589. And there's the formula. If you want to do it, you don't have to. We don't have to do the formulas. I warned you. I promised you that you wouldn't have to do the formulas. You don't have to do the formulas. But if we're going to get $21,589 in 10 years, and we expect an 8% return, then today that $21,589 in 10 years is worth to us $10,000. And how do I do that? I use the present value table, go across 8% down to 10 years, and it gives me the multiplier 0.4632. Don't worry, we'll do it in a little while. You don't have to do it now. Or I use the formula, which is the inverse, 1 divided by what we did up here. But again, don't worry, we're going to do it. Relax, sit back, relax, just listen. Do you understand present value now? What is something that we're going to get in the future? What is it worth to us today? So, slide number 20. Did the formula for the dividend discount model scare you? Well, dear students, the formula has the present value calculation built into it using the exponents. But we mortals will simply use the present value tables. And there's a link to that on the next slide, so relax. Just as we use them in Chapter 1, if you did those optional exercises, I told you you didn't have to do them, but they show you, you know, what we can do if we start putting money away today, what we can do in the future. And what this is showing is if we expect to get something in the future, what is it worth to us today? So the formula becomes the dividend in year number one times the present value multiplier for year number one, plus the dividend for year number two times the present value multiplier for year number two, plus the dividend for year number three times the present value multiplier for year number three. So all those exponentials that we saw, I told you, I warned you, I promised you you wouldn't have to do them. You don't have to do them. Next slide, slide number 21. Let's do that same example that we did all over again using the present value multipliers from the present value table on the class website. So now you want to either put this on your screen or print it out. There's the link, and it's a table. And I told you I don't think 15% is a reasonable expectation, but the book uses it, so I left it on there. You go across the 15% and down the year one. And you'll see a present value multiplier of 0.870. So if we expect to get $100 in 1 year from now, what is that $100 worth to us today if we require a 15% return on our investment? It is worth to us $87. Now, I know it's a little tricky, but think about it, folks. Think about it. Would you rather have $87 today or $100 a year from now? And the answer is, if my required rate of return is 15%, it doesn't matter. $87 today is the same as $100 a year from now at 15%. Now, do it again with 10% and you'll see it's a much different number. Do it with 5% and you'll see it's a very different number. Because everybody requires a different rate of return. Everybody's looking for something different. Some people are happy with 4%. Some people are happy today with 2%. That's what the 10-year Treasury's paying. But other people say, oh, look, I want 8, 9, 10%. Other people want 12, 14, 15%. Good luck with that. And then the $100 we're going to get 2 years from now will we go across in the present value table to 15%. And we go down 2 years, and you see that the present value multiplier is 0.756. Make sure you do that, because we're going to do that eventually. And what that's telling us, $100 times 0.756, is today, $100 2 years from now, that we're going to get in 2 years, is worth to us today $75.60. Would you rather have $75.60 today, or $100 in 2 years? Well, if your required rate of return is 15%, they are equivalent. They are equal to one another. And then in year number three, go down the table and you'll see the present value multiplier is 0.658. So $100 times 0.658 is $65.80. $100 in 3 years today is worth to us $65.80 at 15% required rate of return. You add those three up and you get very close to what we got with the exponential formula. Why is it 8 cents off? Because of the loss of significant digits. Your calculator is doing 20 significant digits. We did 3. So, as I said, what is the present value of the future stream of dividends? At 15%, $100 in 1 year is worth $87 today. In 2 years, it's worth $75.60. In 3 years, it's worth $65.80. The sum of the present value of the future dividend cash flows equals our perceived value of the stock. Is it starting to make sense? We're going to do it over and over again, folks, so don't worry if what we just did over the last 10 minutes is making you want to leave the room and be excused. You know, relax. It's a little tricky. It's actually trickier to understand than it is to do the calculations. After you've done the calculations a few times, it's actually very simple. It's understanding what you're doing. You are discounting. That's the word we use. We use it like a verb. We are discounting that $100 that we're going to get a year from now, that $100 we're going to get from 2 years from now, that $100 we're going to get from 3 years from now. We are discounting them back to the present, which is the opposite of taking money now and compounding it into the future. So those are the two verbs that we use. Let's continue. Slide 22. Let's take a look at some variations now of the dividend discount model. And we're going to go from the simplest ones more toward the more complicated ones. And we're not in the very complicated ones. We're not even going to use. I'm going to show them to you, but I don't even want you to use them. And then we'll wind up back where we started from. The zero growth model is actually not covered in our books. And really, it's a special case of the next one we're going to look at. But I like it because it allows us to think of a stock as a simple machine that pays us a certain amount of dividends, and that's all that stock is worth. This assumes that dividends will continue at a fixed rate indefinitely into the future. So the formula, and you might want to print out the formula sheet or write them down, because it's good to have the formula sheet, that's from chapter 6, and the present value table with you, is that the formula is very simple. You take the annual dividends and you divide it by the required rate of return. Again, the required rate of return is what you decide you as an investor want to receive from your investments. So let's say a stock is paying us $3 a share. If our required rate of return is 6%, then we take $3 per share and divide that by 0.06, and we expect the price of this stock to be $50 per share. Now, the price of the stock is what people are willing to buy and sell the stock for, so we go to the marketplace to see what Mr. Market, as Benjamin Graham would say, to see what the market is charging. And if it's more than $50, well, we would say, well, that's maybe not a very good investment for us. If it's fewer than $50, less than $50, then we'd be interested. Doesn't mean we should buy it. It just means it's a feather in our cap. It's a way to tilt the odds in our favor. And so we do more research and decide if we really do want to buy it. Now, does this model look familiar to you? You math fans will see that all we've done is just look at the dividend yield in another way. The dividend yield that we learned in Chapter 5. You see, here's the model, annual dividends divided by the required rate of return. Well, the dividend yield is the annual dividends divided by the market price of the stock. What we've done is we've swapped the value of the stock with the market price and the required rate of return with the dividend yield. So it's the inversion of the dividend yield. Investors who emphasize the zero growth model are valuing the stock almost exclusively for its dividend yield. In other words, they're interested in companies that aren't growing. Remember, we buy stocks for growth and income, dividends? Well, these people say, I'm not interested in growth. I just want that stock for what it's going to pay me into the future. And if you understand the difference between these two, great. And if you don't worry about it, because I'm not going to belabor the point. But it's basically saying, if you're this kind of person who likes the zero growth model, you are interested in the stock simply for that dividend stream, that zero growth dividend stream. And what kind of stocks don't grow their dividend streams? Well, it turns out that this works really well with utilities. Are utilities growing, folks? I mean, if the area that the utility is in is growing quickly, yeah, but normally, no. The utilities are utilities. They ain't going anywhere, but they're also not exploding on the upside. And so here's a real-life example. The example is Consolidated Edison. It's been around for over 140 years or so. It's the lighting company, the utility company for New York City. And look it up. As of the 20th of February, the market price was $63.75. And they have been currently paying $2.60 per year in annual dividends for a long time. So now we have to ask ourselves, the question is, what is our required rate of return? If we require an 8% rate of return, we take that $2.60 and divide it by 8%, 0.08, and we believe the stock is worth $32.50. So we believe the stock is overpriced if our required rate of return is 8%. But what happens if we use 5%? All right, let's try 5%. $2.60 divided by 5% is $52. Darn, the stock is too expensive if we require 5%. You see, with a market price of $63.75, the stock is yielding 4.1%. So we would, for it to jive, so to speak, for us to be happy, we would have to lower our required rate of return to 4.1%. And if our required rate of return were less than 4.1%, say 3.5%, do the calculation and you would see that we would think that Consolidated Edison was worth more than the market price of $63.75. You see? The zero growth model works very well for stable income producing stocks, and the poster child, the archetypal company, is an income company. Is a utility company, income company. And so the worksheet number one, the worksheet number two, the assignment sheet, and the exam will all have a utility. And what model are you going to use? And they'll be in the same order, folks, always. You're going to use the zero growth model for utilities because they ain't growing. Some of them grow their dividends a little bit, but not much. Okay, so in the face-to-face class, we would do problem number four now in the worksheet number one, and then eventually do worksheet number two. So we do these problems over and over and over again, folks. And as I said, the calculations are actually pretty darn easy. Understanding what you're doing is a little tricky at first, but if you do it enough times, you go, oh, okay, I understand this. This isn't that hard. It really isn't. It really isn't. It's not that sophisticated. You're going to see a few of them are pretty sophisticated, but they're ridiculous. Slide number 25, the constant perpetual growth model. What a silly name, constant perpetual. Don't they mean the same things? It's like the Department of Redundancy Department. This assumes dividends will continue to grow at a specified rate perpetually into the future. And we find some companies doing this. We find some companies, mostly large, blue chip, solid, stalwart companies that grow their dividends consistently into the future. And the formula is very similar to the zero growth model, except we've added these two little pieces onto the formula. You see, over here is the zero growth model, annual dividends divided by required rate of return. And what we do is we take the annual dividends and then multiply them times 1 plus the constant growth rate. Well, if the growth rate is zero, You get the annual dividends, right? Annual dividends times 1 plus 0, that means annual dividends times 1, which means annual dividends. And if the constant growth rate at the bottom is 0, then you subtract 0 from the required growth rate and you get the required growth rate. So it turns out that as I said, the zero growth model is just a special case of this constant perpetual growth model, where the growth rate is zero. But if the growth rate is higher than zero, and it is with many of these blue chip companies that have been around for decades, then we use this formula. And in the book, they derive the formula. They show all the math to derive it. And I don't care if you learn that or not. I'm not going to ask you to do it. If you asked me to do it, I would probably scratch my head and say, okay, I did it once a long time ago, so don't worry about that. Just make sure you can use this. So here's the problem out of the book. It's a company that's paying $10 per share. And they have been growing their dividend at about 5%. And again, a required rate of return of 15%, folks. I think these people are out to lunch. I don't require stocks to pay me 15% a year. But anyway, let's say we did. The next year's growth will be $10.50. So what we do is we take 10 times 1.05, just as we did in the price models, 1 plus the growth rate, and that's $10.50. And then we take 15%, our required rate of return, I would use 8, 9, 10%, and we subtract the 5% growth rate, and 15% minus 5% is 10%. So go ahead with your calculator, type 10.5 divided by 0.1, 10%, and we believe the stock should be selling for $105. Now, we don't know what the stock is selling for. We got to go onto the internet or call up our broker or whatever and find what the stock is actually selling for. But we believe, based on the constant growth of the dividends, a required rate of return of 15%, we believe that it's worth $105. If the market is charging us more, then maybe we're not too interested in it. And if the market is charging us less, maybe it's an attractive company we want to research. Companies that have consistent dividend growth rate are excellent examples, excellent candidates for the constant perpetual growth model. Slide number 26. So let's look at a real life example. 3M. What? 3M. There's a company called 3M? Yeah, well, it used to be called Minnesota Mining and Materials. Cute, right? 3M. It's a blue chip company. It's a member of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. What do they make? Huh? Well, you know what they make. You use them all the time. They're called Post-it notes, right? They make Scotch tape. And they make thousands of different products, folks. Most of all of them are flat. They make stuff that you wrap around houses. They make reflective materials for cars and other, and for vests and the like. Yeah, they're a very sharp, smart company. They've been around forever. And as of the 20th of February, the market price was $168.12. Now, they're currently paying $4.10 in annual dividends. Let's assume that the dividends are growing around 8% per year. Our required rate of return is 13%. I think that's too high. Yeah, but that's what we'll use. We'll use 13% to start. So plugging in the numbers, you get $4.10 of annual dividends times 1 plus the growth rate. Make sure you understand that. It's really not that hard. It's 100% plus 8% or 1 plus 0.08, 1.08. And we divide that by 13% minus 8%, 0.13 minus 0.08. And that turns out to be $4.42.80. You know, round it up. I don't have to use too many digits of accuracy because we want to ignore any kind of precision. We're just coming up with forecasts. And we divide that by 0.05. And it turns out that if we require a 13% rate of return, then we expect the price to be $88.56. Not a great buy. It's selling for almost twice that amount, isn't it? Well, what happens if we simply lower our required rate of return? If we lower our expectations from 13% down to 10%? Then what happens is we recalculate the model, $4.10 of annual dividends times 1 plus the constant growth rate of 1.08, divided by 10% minus 8%, 0.1 divided, I'm sorry, minus 0.08, that's 0.02. So 4.4280 divided by 0.02 gives us an expected stock price of over $220. What a deal. We can buy a stock for $168 that we believe is worth $221. You note that the model is very sensitive to our choice of our required rate of return. And as we said, everybody's looking for a different rate of return. Some people want to see 13%. I think that's too much to ask, but I'm happy with 8, 9, 10%. I don't know about you. Do you think, it should say, do you think, I have to fix that. Do you think that 3M is a good value? Do you think 3M is a good value? Again, this is one of those perfect examples of what's happening in the world. You see, we take Post-it notes and Scotch tape for granted. But there are places in the world where 3M is introducing Post-it notes for the very first time. And all the other thousands of products that they make and produce. Yeah, and that's a good thing, right? That's a good thing because What would your life be without Post-it notes, folks? Think about it. I mean, some people would be... I'm not that big a fan of them. My wife and my son, they use them all the time. Slide number 27. Here's another company you may have heard of, but if you, even if you haven't heard of them, you use their products all the time. And that's Procter & Gamble. What do they make? Right. Soap. Charmin. They make Head & Shoulders. They make Crest toothpaste and Pampers and shaving cream. They own Gillette. Yes, they're a consumer products behemoth. Giant, and they're a member of the Dow Jones Industrial Average. The current market price as of the 20th of February was $84.87, and they're currently paying $2.57 in annual dividends. Let's again assume that the dividends are growing at 8% per year. If our required rate of return is 13%, go ahead, pause the presentation and do the calculations. They're not that hard. $2.57 of annual dividends times 1.08 divided by 13% minus 8%, 0.13 minus 0.05. That gives us 2.7756 divided by 0.05, or $55.51. Doesn't quite measure up to 13% rate of return. So, let's lower our standards. Let's lower our required rate of return to a more reasonable, and I think certainly lucrative, 10% rate of return. 2.57 times 1.08 divided this time by 0.10, 10% minus 0.08, gives us 2.7756, divided by 0.02, or $138.78, about $140, $139. The model says that Procter & Gamble is undervalued if we require only a 10% rate of return. Is this starting to make sense? What if you required a 11% return? You'd run the number again, 12%, run the number again and see what these numbers are giving us. And as we said, forecasting the future is very tricky, so try to ignore any kind of precision. Don't use four digits of accuracy or anything. Are people all of a sudden going to stop using soap, toothpaste, diapers, toilet paper, shampoo, and shaving cream? I don't think so. Slide number 20. Oh, by the way, Procter & Gamble is one of the companies we chose this semester. And it's been a bit of a disappointment, but, you know, it's been, what, 6 weeks? It's not enough time, folks. Tell me how they've done over 6 years, 16 years, 26 years. That's more important. And I think, personally, I'm not telling you to go out and buy Procter & Gamble, folks. I'm just saying this company has been around for over 100 years. I forget exactly how long. It started in the 1800s. It's going to be around for another 100 years. Because people are going to wash their faces and their hair and their Tide. They have Tide. Slide 28. Another blue chip, Coca-Cola. Yeah. Selling diabetes. I mean, fizzy sugar water. The current market price is almost $42 as of 20th of February, $41.97. Currently paying $1.32 in annual dividends, and let's assume that dividends are growing around 8% per year. If our required rate of return is 13%, then we take the $1.32 in dividends times 1.08, divided by 13% minus 8%, running these numbers, and I'm going to assume that you can do these calculations, do them again over and over again, gives us about $28.50. So much for caramel-colored fizzy sugar water that gives people diabetes. The price of it is almost $42. But if we reduce our required rate of return to a more reasonable, in my humble opinion, 10%, then we run the numbers, $1.32 of dividends times 1.08 divided by 0.1 minus 0.08, 10% minus 0.08, minus 8%, and we come out with $71.28. Maybe we ought to spend some more time researching Coca-Cola. Because in the United States, the average person drinks over 400 Cokes a year. Now, I have a hard time believing this, because I don't drink any. I can't stand this stuff. Even when I was a kid, I didn't like it, and people thought I was nuts. Makes your teeth feel really strange. It's great for cleaning battery terminals, folks. That's my understanding. In fact, in the Navy and in the Army, they use it for that. But there's somebody drinking 800 Cokes a year, because I don't drink any. And there's somebody even drinking more than that. 20, 30 years ago, no one in China or India drank this stuff. But now, the average in China is 38 per year and growing fast. The average in India is 12 and growing even faster. Yes, dear students, we are exporting diabetes all around the world. That's what we do best. And guess which country drinks the most, folks? Guess which country per capita drinks the most Coca-Cola? Ustedes que tienen parientes y familia en México saben. You folks who have family and relatives in Mexico know who drinks the most. It's Mexico. They drink per capita over 730 Cokes a year. That's almost, think about it, folks, that's almost two a day. Yeah, it's two Cokes a day that people are drinking. And they wonder why Mexico has such a high incidence of diabetes. No, they don't wonder. They know exactly why. But it's very popular in Mexico. Slide number 29. GE, General Electric. Another real life example. Another blue chip stock that's been around for over 130 years. The company that was one of the first companies in the Dow Jones Industrial Average and is the only company that is still there from 1896. The stock price was $25.21 on the 20th of February, and they're currently paying 92 cents in annual dividends. Again, let's assume dividends are growing at 8% a year. If our required rate of return is 13%, we run the numbers, and I want you to do that on your own now. You should be big enough and strong enough to do that. And you get almost 20 bucks, $19.87. And GE, again, just like the others, doesn't look that great at 13%. But if we require a 10% rate of return, then GE appears to be a great deal at almost 50 bucks a share. Selling for 25. $49.68. And please don't, you know, use too much precision, because we are just doing forecast into the future, like the weather. But this is after GE had a near-death experience in 2008-09, because everyone thinks of GE as an industrial company. But in 2007, by that year, they were making more money off of their finance arms. They have insurance companies. They have finance companies, leasing companies. And yeah, the financial turmoil of 2008-09 that saw the destruction of Washington Mutual and Wachovia and AIG and Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac also hit GE pretty darn hard. And they dropped their dividend from $1.24 down to 40 cents in 2009. Oh, after raising it for decades, after consistently raising their dividend for decades, they had to drop it from $1.24 to 40 cents. But in 2010, they started raising the dividend again. First to 48 cents, 56, 60, 68, 78, 76, 88, and now 92 cents per share. They have been raising their dividend at a torrid pace, because they obviously want to get it back to $1.24 to say, look, we've recovered from the Great Recession. So GE appears to be a great deal. Now, am I saying you should go out and buy GE? No, it's just a starting point. It's just a technique to tilt the odds in our favor. Okay? Good. Okay, last one. Altria. Who's Altria, folks? Well, Altria used to be called Philip Morris. Yeah, they sell cigarettes, and they used to own Kraft, and they used to own Miller Brewing and Post Cereal and lots of other different companies, Nabisco, but they've basically sold all these things off. In fact, they've sold off the sales of cigarettes outside the United States. That's called Philip Morris International, but Altria is the company that sells the cigarettes in the United States. It's a blue-chip company. It used to be in the Dow until they got shamed to kick it out because they sell death. But let's take a look at the current market price of $55.61, annual dividends of $2.08, and again, let's assume that dividends are growing around 18% per year. If we use that same required rate of return of 13%, we get $44.93, which is kind of close to $55.61, but still a bit, you know, overvalued at $55.60. But if we lower our required rate of return to 10%, then we are valuing, we believe that Altria is worth $112. What a buy! If you ignore the potential tobacco-related lawsuit damage and that tobacco kills off 400,000 Americans each year. I mean, seriously, folks, would you buy Altria? Would you buy a company that sells a product that when used as directed, kills its consumers? Well, yes, as a matter of fact, if you're interested in making money, this has been a very good stock for decades. And I'll never forget an interview many years ago, folks, by Louis Rukeyser, who ran a show for decades called Wall Street Week. And you can still see it, well, you can see reruns on online YouTube. Brilliant man. And he was interviewing a gentleman who really was very bullish, meaning he liked Altria. He was a money manager. And the gentleman was Mormon. And the Mormons don't, you know, they don't smoke cigarettes. And they don't believe in smoking cigarettes. So Mr. Rukeyser asked this gentleman, well, now, such, I forget his name, but you're Mormon, aren't you? Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, I am. And you don't believe in cigarettes, do you? He goes, well, no, I would not use them, and I recommend people not to use them, but there are no secrets. This is business, and my job is to make money for my, you know, clients. So you see, he had a bit of an ethical question for the gentleman, and he said, look, you know, it's business. There are no secrets. These people are supposed to know that this stuff is dangerous, and if you don't know it's dangerous, you're probably 12 years old and 15 years old, and that's when they get people hooked on this stuff. Okay, anyway, all right, off my soapbox. Let's continue. Hey, who's that? Who is it? Yeah? Who are you? It's my conscience.
Come clean
about what?
Fess up.
Fess up about what? I made them up. I made them up. All these companies are growing their dividends faster than 8%.
That's better.
Eesh. I hate consciousness. What's going on here, folks? What's going on is that we continued to assume that we were growing our dividends for all these companies at 8%. But the recent dividend growth rates for Coke, Procter & Gamble, 3M, Altria, and GE are all currently higher than 8%. Coke is 8.8, Procter & Gamble is 8.8, 3M is 8.9, and Altria is 10.2%. They've been growing their dividends at more than 10%. GE has been growing their dividends at almost 18%. But the model does not work if the required rate of return is equal to or less than the dividend growth rate. You get very strange numbers. You get division by zero or negative prices. So what we should actually do is raise our expected rates of return for all these companies. All these companies are better buys than what the model is telling us for 10 or 13%. Now, they're better buys for 10% than they are for 13%, but still, this is why I am hooked on blue chip large company stocks that have their roots deep in the economy, because sure, they're not going to explode, they're not going to double in price in 1 year like some companies do, but they're there, they're going to continue, they're going out, they're searching all over the world and opening new markets, and I'm actually quite, you know, over the long run, in any one given year, you never know what's going to happen. And how many companies, folks, really are like this? Well, it turns out that there are several. Blue chip companies with long histories of rising dividends. Peter Lynch, I don't know if I mentioned this, but back in Chapter 5, Peter Lynch calls them the stalwarts, which is, I guess, a good word. Check out ExxonMobil, McDonald's, United Technologies, Honeywell, Johnson Controls, Yum Brands. Check out these blue chip companies that have long histories of rising dividends. And if you haven't figured this out yet, dear students, this is what I believe your portfolio should primarily consist of. These companies. Sure, you want to buy Titter or GoPro or Farsbook and, you know, the latest hot stock. Go ahead, buy it. But make it the spice in your own little mutual fund, right? Make it the 5 or 10% and make GE and Coke and Maltria and 3M and Johnson & Johnson and ExxonMobil and Chevron. Make those companies the pasta, the meat and potatoes, the main portion of your plate, so to speak. You do what you want, but that's my that's my story, and I'm sticking with it. Slide number 32. The constant growth model. Ay, Paquito, do we really have to know how to do this? And the answer is no. Because this takes the constant perpetual growth model one step further. It assumes dividends will grow at a specified rate for a specified number of years. So here is the constant perpetual growth model, and we add this term to account for growth for a number of years. Just as the constant perpetual growth model evolved from the zero growth model, adding an additional term to account for the constant growth of dividends. Do I want you to learn how to do this? No, I don't care if you learn how to do this one. And it gets even worse. Here's the two-stage dividend growth model, which takes the previous model that we're not going to use and takes it one step further. It assumes dividends will continue to grow at a specified rate into the future, presumably the fast growth stage, and then grow at a second, presumably slower growth rate once the company matures. Look, folks, many decades ago, Benjamin Graham, who was Warren Buffett's teacher, warned against using overly sophisticated mathematical models to value stocks. He said, look, it ain't that difficult. There's judgment involved. And the numbers are not that, you know, hard to do. Don't make them any harder. This model may look very impressive, especially to those who love math, but it has serious problems from a theoretical standpoint. It is very difficult to accurately predict future dividend growth during the initial fast growth stage of a stock. Usually, companies do not pay significant dividends while they are growing quickly because they're reinvesting the money back in to the company. So ignore this two-stage model and the model that was on the previous slide. We're not going to use those. If you want to do it, go right ahead. Slide 34. Observations of the dividend discount models. Well, they look pretty cool, right? For companies that are paying dividends. But if a company isn't paying any different dividends, how can you use them? Well, it turns out these you can't. We're going to see one where you can. The constant perpetual growth rate is usually an unrealistic assumption, except for those big blue chip companies that have their roots deep in the economy. And dividend growth rates are very difficult to estimate, except for those large cap, well-established companies. Fast-growing companies, it's almost impossible. The problems of the dividend discount models notwithstanding, repeat after me, the value of a stock is based on the present value, is based on the present value of its future cash flows. So instead of looking at a company just from the idea that I'm buying it at $10 and it's going up $12, or $20 or $100 or whatever, I'm buying this stock because it's paying me $1 a year now, and next year it's going to pay me $1.08, and next year after that it's going to pay me $1.12. And I don't care what happens to the price. Well, I do care what happens to the price. In fact, that's what we're going to do in our next presentation. Because, dear students, if you thought this was cool, wait till we go full circle in our next presentation and look at the discounted cash flow model. So get your thinking caps on and be prepared to stretch your mind. And we'll see you in our next presentation. And go back over and do these, all right? Do problem number 5 in both worksheets. And do the problems in the presentation and do the problems in the assignment. And if you have any problems with the problems, you know who to contact. See you in our next presentation.